This will be a big downscaling from all the sort of global and national kinds of things. I'm going to mainly be talking about a couple of farms in western Nebraska. But this study is a study we've been working on that involves a pilot study on cellulosic ethanol from corn stover. And the part of it that we've been looking at is really looking at the environmental and other greenhouse gas components of that, the impacts of that residue utilization. And a number of co-authors up here I'd like to acknowledge, from Colorado State, but other organizations as well. And I would also mention that Amy Swan has a poster tomorrow afternoon where she presents some of the results from this study as well. Okay. So, as I mentioned, the part that we're working on is really to look at the impacts of this stover removal for biofuels, specifically at kind of the greenhouse gas component of it, looking not only at the fossil carbon dioxide offsets that you're generating from the biofuels, but also the greenhouse gases associated with the in-the-field processes, so looking at soil carbon and other greenhouse gases. We're also interested in doing some work on erosion and water resources in this particular study, but that most of that's still pending. So I'll focus on really the kind of the greenhouse gas aspects of it. And what we really want to focus on here is to look at how these outcomes vary for different kinds of management systems. Our work kind of involves two components. One is a field measurement and monitoring study where we've gone out onto farmer fields that are cooperating in this project and have taken baseline soil samples, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And then we're also doing some farm level and regional assessment using models to look at the sustainability question of this biomass removal. In terms of the management systems that we're looking out there, really three main kinds of activities are included in that. So we're looking at cultivation, irrigation, and crop rotation. Cultivation, we're in the model analysis, we're looking at different tillage practices. Actually, in the field component of it, the farmers are operating various kinds of more or less conventional management in terms of their tillage, but we also are doing some sampling in a native grassland to use as a comparison to that. As I mentioned before, irrigated land is the focus of the feedstock production, but we're also studying adjacent dryland to get some comparisons of what's going on in terms of the soil changes in particular. Most of those systems out there are there's a variety of different crop rotations, some continuous corn, but also corn in rotation with soybean and with wheat. Some results from the soil sampling that we've done. We went out two or three years ago, and we've done a lot of sampling on farmer fields. I'm going to talk about two farms, the Johnson Farm and the Mitski Farm. And the samples have been taken to more or less to a meter's depth in all cases, but I'll show the results for the 0 to 20 centimeter. Most of the significant differences that we see are occurring in the surface layer. So here you can see that carbon stocks on the irrigated, the dark green bars, and the dryland, the light green bars. And we also, as I mentioned before, we've sampled in some adjacent native grassland to kind of give us a reference point when we're trying to interpret the changes that we see in the soil carbon. So if you look at this, you can see a couple of interesting things. One is that it looks like at the Johnson Farm you have a fairly substantial increase or a difference in the irrigated versus the dryland systems, and almost coming up into levels similar to what's in the native prairie. While in the Mitski Farm, there's really not a whole lot of separation between the irrigated and dryland. It looks to be a little bit higher. Well, we think there's a good explanation for that, and that is that most of the land out there is under center pivot irrigation that had really started back in the late 50s and 60s, but there's been a steady increase up until about to the year 2000 or so. And these two farms then came, the Johnson farm came under irrigation in 1970 and the Mitski farm quite recently in 97. So we think that that's probably a major control on how the carbon is developing under these irrigated sites. And it also is kind of a unique part of this area that really there's a kind of a comparatively recent history of irrigation coming in here. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the field level analysis that we've done using the model and combining that with the information from the measurements. We've used the sensory model and we've applied that to a number of these different pivots with different management systems and different land use histories. And we really then want to compare the influence of that land use history and the previous management on the soil responses as you remove that residue. So how much does that previous history matter in terms of the future responses as you start to remove residues? I apologize, this might not be easy to see with the lights on, but this is kind of a stylized time history of the management history on this one pivot on the Johnson farm. Plow out here around 1940, and about a 30-year period of time under dryland, predominantly wheat fallow practices, irrigation, and of course the whole system changed here around 1970. He grew continuous corn then for about 15 years. More recently has gone into corn, soybean, wheat. Now we wanted to simulate this previous history and then look into the future under, say, a scenario like a corn, soybean, and then look at the effects of different levels of residue removal on the soil carbon. And this is the results that come out for this particular pivot. You can see the decline that you would expect from coming out of native prairie into something like a wheat fallow system. Once the system is brought into irrigation on this continuous corn, fertilizer is added, soil carbon starts to increase, and then the model predicts it kind of levels out here, particularly as the system goes into a less corn intensive and in this corn, soybean, wheat. This value is a bit lower. We tend to we underestimate what we measured on the field for this particular pivot. So you see a certain characteristic in terms of the changes in soil carbon. Now, if we take this management then, this scenario, and look at, okay, what's going to happen to soil carbon as we begin to take away different levels of residue, we basically just then simulated 10%, 20%, et cetera, removal rates. And so in this particular instance, you can see that the model predicts that if you remove greater than about 30% of those above ground residues, you start to get a decline and a loss of soil carbon. So there's a particular threshold in that situation. If we now go to one of the other fields on the Mitski farm, you recall that there was quite a different land use history. So in this particular case, there was a dryland cropping history of almost 60 years. Irrigation was brought in 97. It's been under a similar kind of a corn, soybean, wheat combination as the Johnson farm. And then we wanted to do a forward projection for 20 years, looking at, okay, what would happen if we brought in continuous corn and residue removal on this site. And here, of course, you see quite a different pattern. You see this similar drawdown. The model predicts that then when he started irrigation that you start to get a fairly rapid bump up in the soil carbon. These are the values that we estimated for that we measured on that field, so we seem to be doing quite a good job there. Projecting this into the future then, you get a very different response that because of this land use history and because of the fact that you've recently converted into irrigation, you have an upward trajectory for some period of time, almost irregardless of removing that surface residue. Now, of course, the values you get in terms of carbon storage is similarly quite a bit different. As you remove more and more residues, the carbon values are lower. Okay, so that's a kind of a snapshot at some of the work looking at these individual farms and individual pivots. I want to close off here with talking a bit about the regional analysis that we're doing, and that is focusing. Most of you may not apologize; I didn't have a larger map in here, but this is the southwest corner of Nebraska. So you've got Chase County here, you've got some counties in Colorado. And so this is the area that we're looking at. We're looking at the irrigated lands within this area. The town here is Imperial, Nebraska. This larger study that we're involved in is sort of looking at this region within about a 50-kilometer radius, or I think it's maybe it's 50-mile radius of Imperial. As a kind of a practical zone of which you might be able to collect residues for a cellulosic ethanol plant here. So in our analysis, we're using information across this region of the climate, the soil types, the land use interactions, et cetera, and then trying to look at kind of a whole picture of the net greenhouse gas impact. So we're not only looking at the biofuel offsets from the cellulosic ethanol, and when we do that analysis, we're also doing it for a net life cycle value. So we're accounting for the emission costs, if you will, the carbon costs associated with the production of that cellulosic ethanol. And we're also including the soil carbon and nitrous oxide emissions. Now these are kind of averaged regional average values, looking at a couple of scenarios here for basically a 20-year projection period of time. So on the x-axis over here, you have the average soil carbon change in grams per meter squared per year as a function of the fraction of stover removed. And this is then looking at two kind of forward projection scenarios, one looking at corn-soybean, one looking at continuous corn. And we also then basically a very simple assumption, just look what happens if you convert the present tillage to no-till or you continue with the current practices. And let's see, I lost my pointer here. So basically you see that under the corn-soybean, a similar pattern we saw for the individual fields, but these are the means and standard deviations if we look at all the county soil land use combinations in here. But you see a very linear effect of as you remove more stover, you get a decline in the rate of carbon storage that's occurring here. But it's different. Under the conventional tillage, you can, in this case under corn soybeans, you can go down to about 50% removal, and then you start to get a net loss of soil carbon. Under no-till, you can sustain a higher rate of carbon increase. Under this continuous corn scenario, it's a similar pattern, but much higher levels of carbon sequestration being predicted where you're not removing residues. So how does this work out then in terms of the net greenhouse gas balance? And I will try to lead you through this fairly. This is my next to last slide. So here's carbon dioxide offsets in tons of CO2 equivalents per year for this 20-year projection period for this 50-mile radius area. And if we assume that, and so again, the four sort of basic simple scenarios that the cropping practices there are either corn-soybean or continuous corn, and the tillage management is either continued conventional tillage or conversion and no-till. The different bars here, if it's a positive value, that's either a carbon sink or a fossil fuel offset. The bars that are below the line here are emissions in carbon equivalents. And so we've got the main components of this is the soil carbon, nitrous oxide, and the biomass production. So you see trends that are not too surprising from what I've talked about so far, and that is that one last thing. So then rather than look at this full suite of residue removal, we chose to look at essentially the baseline case of no residue removal versus 50% to 80% of the stover removal. And I guess a couple broad patterns are apparent. Obviously, as you increase the stover removal, you have more, you generate more biofuel offsets. And that comes at the cost of storage in the soil, going essentially from a sink to a source in this particular scenario, or a larger sink going to a smaller source. The patterns are fairly simple to see, and I guess the take-home messages are really that, overall, the offsets gained from the biofuel production are greater in all cases than the carbon storage. But it's apparent that really the tillage management and also the rotations matter quite a lot. And if you change to no-till, you get benefits in terms of increased offset values and also increasing the amount of corn in the rotation is not surprising. So that's all quite well and good, I guess. But I think in terms of sustainability, one of the issues that I think the previous speaker alluded to it is there are a number of other factors that are very important. In this particular area, there's no question that water and water availability is probably the primary sustainability factor. And here you can see, so for the state of Nebraska, these are the levels of aquifer depletion. And you can't see from the back, but this area that we're looking at here has some of the highest depletion rates, up to 50 or 60 feet decline in the aquifer. So we all know that there are issues about the long-term sustainability of that area. So we can't forget those components of sustainability as we begin to look at and possibly promote these kinds of practices. So in terms of an overall set of conclusions, this particular area in southwest Nebraska, because of this recent irrigation history, is kind of interesting from the standpoint of the soil carbon balance, because it's a special case. You get this likely sort of upward trajectory because of this recent conversion. And so relative to perhaps other places in the Corn Belt, this particular area may be one in which, from the standpoint of the soil carbon balance, it might well tolerate larger levels of stover removal without a depletion of current soil organic carbon. But I haven't talked about, and sort of following from this, I would say that probably erosion, in terms of the importance of and the sustainability of residue removal, erosion is probably likely to be the most important limiting factor here. So that in a sense, if you can guarantee that you can have erosion at an acceptable level, you may well be able to utilize as much residue as you would like from the standpoint of not degrading soils. We don't have the experimental evidence yet. There are a few studies. Ardell Halverson has done some recent work looking at no-till on irrigated plots. There's some other people that are beginning to look at this, but it certainly looks like that no-till can substantially increase the net greenhouse gas benefits if we are going to be removing a stover. Certainly increasing the frequency of corn in the rotation will do that as well, but there are, of course, all the issues of corn rotation with other crops that have to be considered. And in this particular area, right now I suspect that there's a lot of pressure. I know a number of the farmers there, they couldn't grow as much corn as they would like to because they didn't have enough water. And they were shifting increasingly almost less corn in the rotations, and that may be a long-term trend. So I would say that really in this particular area, the water is absolutely key. And that sort of opens up the question of how do we really probably should look more at the potential role for biofuel crops in these kind of systems, looking, you know, more at limited irrigation systems and both looking at the annual and perennial systems. And I think that was it. I'd like to acknowledge the Imperial Young Farmers, who were the collaborators and instigators of the project, and also funding from some other sources. So, thanks.